Okay. So, I'm going to try to find a good note here. Some of y'all prayed for this so I wouldn't talk too long. So I got a little bit too excited in the basketball game on Friday, yelling at the refs. But anyways, I'm going to let Terry, this is good because he's better anyway, like he really is. Most of y'all know me because I'm the one that puts myself out there. It's just my personality. I've always been that way. But the man behind the crazy that keeps all of this sane, you need to hear from him. So I just want to say that I think that love is a bottle of glitter spray. So, and I'll tell you why later. When I was born, I obviously look like my mom, but I act like my dad. I feel I got the best of both worlds. I think the Lord gave me to my mom whenever she just started so that she would have enough energy. And then he said, I'm sorry about what I gave you first, so I'll give you Kindle. So, I grew up in this church. My parents came here. If y'all have met them, you know their story. I've been so blessed to have all of this, all of you guys, all of the love, the direction. I was struggling multiple times in my life. I remember maybe being six and asking the Lord, like, I don't want to go to hell. Please save me. Because when you grow up in this church, you know everything. The first time I prayed with my mom, it was just so I would not go to hell because I was scared. And it didn't really mean anything. And then I had multiple other friends at different times, like Lord's Supper times and stuff, get baptized. And they talked about getting saved. And I was like, oh, I need to get saved. I'm not saved. Because I never had peace. And so they would get saved. Maybe they did. I don't know. And so I would re-get saved and re-get baptized. I think I might hold the record. Stephen, Clarity, and I argue about which one of us got baptized the most times. So, my claim to fame. When I was about 14, I really struggled. I had no peace. I kept trying to get saved. I knew that I wasn't saved. And I went to Marita, because she was a youth leader at the time, and I asked her, I said, how do you know if you're saved or not? And she said, go back to the time when you were saved. I couldn't remember the exact time. I remembered getting baptized a bunch of times. I remembered, like, I just could not think of a time when I truly gave everything over to the Lord. I need a lot of people to help keep me in check, but I don't really need a lot of people to, I can do a lot of things on my own. So I feel like, and like analyzing it later, I feel like I was trying to do it on my own. And I don't know how to explain this to people. Like, I kind of feel sorry for people that have grown up in this church because it's really hard when you know the truth from a baby all the way up. To, like, you know what you're supposed to do. How do you magically make it happen? And I think I was trying to magically make this thing happen by doing all the formulas, and it wasn't working. And so Brother Brian went to Russia, and while he was in Russia, I was just in agony. I was afraid to go to sleep at night. I was afraid that the Lord would come back, that I would be left behind. I remember praying everywhere I could. I came into church and prayed. Didn't work. I prayed in my bedroom. I prayed at school. I prayed everywhere. And I could never get saved. And Brother Brian came back from Russia the first night when he preached. He gave an invitation different than what he normally does. And I just remember thinking in my head, I don't know why I would even bother to go forward because I keep trying and this is not working. I think you have it as salvation for everybody but me. And so I went out and Miss Marita knew I'd been struggling with this and she followed me out and she's like, do you want to get saved? And I was like, yeah, but it's not working. She's like, why don't you just tell the Lord that? So back in Brother Brian's office, I just prayed and I said, look, Lord, I've tried everything and this is my last try. I am done with this and you better do something because it is not working. And like something along those lines. And when I said that, I felt instant peace. It was like he said, oh, I was kind of waiting for you to let me do it. So I don't know how to tell the kids in this church. Like, I understand a lot of you guys have that struggle. I'm sorry. I've been there. I'll give you an understanding hug. That, like, the Lord just has to come to you. So, and ever since then, I have never, ever struggled with my salvation. Like, I can't explain. The peace was instant, and I've never had a doubt since then. So, I used to wish I had like a cool testimony of like being miraculously changed and coming from some awful life to something that I could share just to have a good story. Now that I'm much older, I'm really, really thankful I did not have a horrible life, that I had all of y'all helping me, because I don't even want to think about where I'd be if I hadn't had all the moms and dads in this church to help guide me along the way. If I hadn't had everyone showing me service, showing me everything that they did. So when I got saved, I had a new desire. Well, I never had a desire before that to read the word. So I had a desire to read the word. I've always been a service person. So that wasn't hard for me. But I spent the rest of the times after that, up through college, just trying to serve, wanting to please God, hoping to find a mate that would help me, you know, serve in the church or maybe on the mission field or somewhere. So now.
Thank you. Do you have more you want to say?
No, I mean, okay.
Well, Crystal's kind of lost her voice. There was a lot of nice things she wanted to say about me, so I'm gonna go ahead and go through that list. No, I'm just kidding. There are some quick facts I want to kind of get out of the way that I think are interesting, given my life and how I grew up. This year, marked 19 years of marriage. June marked 20th year at Walmart as a software engineer. September marked 20th year as a member of MBBC. Actually, I think it was 21. Anyways, 20th. We'll go with that. Crystal and I have been involved in Children's Church for 18 years. We have lived on Lisa Lane for 18 years as well. You'll understand why those years are so important to me, I think, if you listen to my testimony. My favorite verse is Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the thoughts I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. My favorite quote is from a book about Adam Brown. It's called Fearless, totally worth the read if you haven't read it. This quote came from that book. Life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming, wow, what a ride. I'm going to be reading a lot of this because otherwise it would take me way too long. So, I was born in a small Arkansas town located on the opposite side of the state from Mission Boulevard Baptist Church. As the Lord normally does, he revealed his desire for my life when it was time to know it. When my mom was in the hospital having me, my parents did not have a plan for the name they would give me. So they decided to name me after my father because they didn't have an option they liked better. And this was breaking with tradition because normally it's the first child, not the second child, that's named after their father. My family name is TJ, which are the initials of my first and middle name. Nobody around here ever calls me TJ. Because I represent my father. Being named after my father is one of the most pivotal events in my life because of the role it played in bringing me to salvation. I had a father who loved to wrestle with his four boys, teach us to throw a baseball, take us frog gigging, hunting, fishing, and work with us as he fixed his sports car. Unfortunately, my parents did not attend church except when we visited my mother's parents on holidays. My parents were chasing the American dream. They both worked in a factory. They had purchased two cars and an old truck. Even with all of those things, they had enough money left to buy land and planned to build a house. The plan quickly fell apart. My father was diagnosed with a brain tumor. As his health started to decline, my mother moved close to her parents so they could help us while she cared for Dad and worked. Doctors and nurses told my mom she should leave Dad and remarry. Many people in her situation choose the easier path, but my mother chose love in the form of service. My mother's choice to value my father caused me to value her and allowed me to see what sacrifice looks like. Every good decision in my life has come from what I learned in my mother's simple principle. Love is only real when it serves others. Also, during this time of my father's declining health, I started attending Sunday school regularly, learning basic Bible stories. I was 11 years old. My father passed away on June 11th, 1991. My mom remarried the following February, and unfortunately, we moved away from my friends and church to Texas. Texas wasn't the unfortunate thing, but the unfortunate thing was the leader of our home was an alcoholic. Needless to say, it was a time of misery and heartache in my family life. It finally ended somewhat after we had been evicted from our apartment and were living in tents for a few weeks by a local lake. My grandparents came from Arkansas and rescued us. They took me and my three brothers home to be with them. By the way, the house I lived in was, I think, just a block and a half from where Miss Rachel was living at that time, where my grandparents lived. I didn't know that till later. The difficult summer before my grandparents picked up had two positive outcomes. I grew six inches to get to 6'2", the height I am now, and I lost 30 pounds. Since I registered for school late, I was unable to play for the junior high football team. I focused on basketball instead. And a few very notable habits began while I lived with my grandparents and attended school there. My eighth grade English teacher made us read several books and write reports about them. She also made her class invent several of our own stories across many of the literary genres. And the first time in my academic life, I got a B in a class, but developed a critical, lifelong love of reading that would play a pivotal role in my salvation later in life. My grandparents got us back in church, and my older brother and I involved in the youth group. My grandpa, a retired pastor, also did a long series of family devotions with us over the book of Revelations. We primarily focused on timeline and events. At the end of my eighth grade year, my grandparents requested my mother to take us home to raise. My mom decided that would be best and moved us back to northeastern Arkansas, where I was from. there's not much to share about this time. This was like ninth grade to my senior year. My stepfather never worked. All my memories of him are of him locked in his bedroom, dealing with a hangover, or working himself towards one. He put a lock on the fridge so that we could not eat whenever we wanted. He would not allow us to be around Mom during the day or night. We were not allowed to be in the living room. Put another way, I rarely got a chance to talk with my mom one-on-one like teenagers do. We had to be outside or in our room. So I played basketball and started lifting weights. I was forced to quit playing organized basketball when my stepfather decided to not allow my mother to pick me up from practice. This caused the first of several physical fights I would get into with my stepdad. He made me quit the school team. Regardless, I played basketball everywhere, anywhere, at any time allowed to stay away from home. I also attended church whenever someone would pick us up because I didn't want to be at home. The last physical fight with my stepdad was a result of their promise to come to church and then not showing up. I ran out of the house completely intent on running away. It was at this moment I realized just how alone I was. I had no friends. No one at church was really close enough to trust. Absolutely no one at school cared. My parents had already sent me away. I was utterly alone. I returned to the house, but not to church, and turned my back on God. I was done with this superstitious nonsense. I wanted out of my house, and nothing else mattered. I enlisted in the U.S. Navy and left for Chicago, Illinois, 5 days after graduation. My time in the Navy was short-lived as I got an early discharge. While away, my stepfather had passed away from liver failure. I returned home with the intention of working and attend a local college the following semester. Unfortunately, my plans changed when I broke my foot playing basketball. For 7 months, I could barely walk on my right leg. I had hit a very low point at this time, gaining nearly 60 pounds and spending most of my time alone in my room reading. After missing the cutoff for enrollment to the spring semester, I decided to set my sights on the University of Arkansas for the fall of 1998. By setting small, achievable goals, I eventually worked off the extra weight, as well as doing everything necessary to attend the college. I moved into Pomfret Hall in the fall of 1998, ready to push towards a much brighter future. I found it easier to relate to people in college, and with my cousin and uncle also attending the U of A, I found I was busy enough. I didn't have a place for God in this busier schedule. The fall semester of my sophomore year in 1999, when the world was awaiting the computer apocalypse called Y2K, the Lord leveraged the groundwork laid by my grandparents to open my eyes in faith, acknowledge the truth, grant me repentance, and enable me to believe in his finished work in the cross. Chris Wright befriended me by striking up a conversation during breakfast at the Pomfret Hall Dining Center. Though he was easy to talk to, he had an annoying habit of always bringing up Jesus in the conversation. It turned out that what Chris had to say about Christ reminded me very much of the truth I heard as a kid in Sunday school. I was coming under conviction, but of course I didn't have any understanding of it at the time. In the meantime, my mom had remarried, and they now lived in Mena, Arkansas. Chris offered to drop me off at home if I would wait for him to finish his last final. Since I had a few days before he was done, I decided to read a book he had loaned to me about Revelations entitled Daniel to Doomsday. The Lord opened my eyes to the truth of his word. I knew God's word was real and relevant to me. The Revelations timeline my grandparents had taught me so many years ago came back in a moment, and I knew it was all true. And then I thought, if Revelations is true, then God is not a superstition, and my debt to him is also real. That was the second work of God to grant me repentance. Being truly secure in my relationship with God will take a bit of time to unpack. I will keep it simple for now and say, I acknowledge the size of my sin debt before God, accepted his gift to pay that debt for me. When I sat on my dorm room bed after prayer, I was filled with a strange desire to begin growing in Christ. I told Chris of the choice I had made and went home for Christmas break. You have a few more words you want to share? I have a little bit more.
So we'll cut back into me. So I, growing up in this church and watching everyone serve and give and love, and my parents, if you don't know, I'm the oldest of six, and my parents always had people at their house. They were always serving, always giving, still do that. There's so many people I look around in this church and see and that have done that too, and impacted my life. Of course, I went to school here and graduated, and I decided that I wanted to come back and be a teacher at the school because I wanted to be able to help out and give back like people gave to me. The school needed a certified coach, basketball coach, because they didn't, they had certified teachers, but for our accreditation and to be in the AAA, we needed someone that had a certified coaching degree. And so I didn't care what kind of teaching degree I got. And I was like, oh, PE and coaching sounds fun. Sure. I like basketball. I wasn't any good at it, but I'm good at telling people what to do. So I thought that'd work out. So anyways, so I got a scholarship to go to John Brown, and thank goodness I didn't get enough money to live there, so I had to commute back and forth, but that was a huge blessing. That the Lord knows what we need, and he works everything out the way we need it. So he knew that I didn't need to be completely away from all this freedom, and he knew that I needed to be in the campus group, and so I was able to be involved with Brother Pat and Miss Colleen, and after a few years, the first couple years, it was very small, but then we had more and more people graduate and join, and then people, you know, brought people from the U of A. I didn't really ever get anyone from John Brown to come because it was just too far away for them, but I was able to be, to get a great education there. Their teaching program is phenomenal, and then I was able to be involved in the campus group here. And so but through my time at John Brown, I was constantly looking for someone. So I've always been a little bit boy crazy. And so I was always looking for somebody, you know, to kind of complete me because I was focused. I would get off focus from the Lord a lot and be more focused on if I have this person, then together we can serve the Lord. And that's, of course, all of you grown-ups and probably even the kids know that's backwards. But so I had some pivotal points in college where I had the opportunity to take a different path. And it was the relationship with the people in this church that really kept me doing the right thing. And my parents' involvement, as much as I didn't like all of their strict rules, my mom, even in college, she always found out when I was misbehaving somehow. And now that I'm a parent, I know the Lord just like does that. He reveals that to parents, and that's a blessing in disguise. And so so I was trying to decide if I was going to serve the Lord or go off and be stupid. And especially at that time, like every time I would walk into church, because even then I was walking into church late. So I would walk into church and Brother Ron Roan and Brother Gene Basho would normally be in the foyer area. And they always kind of had a bet going as to what tall shoes I would wear to church that day. So, and I thought, I can't be stupid. It would break their hearts. So even when my parents didn't, not that my parents, they mean the world to me, but the people of this church made a huge impact in keeping me here. So and still today. So I graduated. Great. Now I'm going to cry and you really won't be able to hear me. So I graduated from John Brown, and like they say at John Brown, they had a whole married student section. They say if you don't get married at John Brown, you never will. So I was a little bit stressed about that. So I decided I'd help the Lord out and find somebody. So I looked at some different candidates and decided that they would be good for this reason and that reason, because they could support me and I could teach at the school and help out at the church. Like, I had the right idea, but I was doing it. And so I went through a lot of internal struggles in this, and the Lord constantly kept shutting doors, and those relationships didn't work out. Thank goodness, at least I was still living at home, so I didn't misbehave too badly. And so finally, I remember one day I was like, Lord, I don't want to be like this. You know what? If your choice for me is to be single my whole life, I guess I will do that. Like, it's not like I mean, that's awful, but I guess, like, I was really trying to get, I needed to give this up, this. And so I fasted and prayed for a whole day, which I really like food, so that was intense. And I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to be done with this. I'm going to serve in the campus group, because I think the Lord knows that I'm so crazy and headstrong. I can do a lot more if I'm not distracted by somebody, and I just need to be done with that, and I need to focus on the Lord. So that's when I decided that I was going to be single the rest of my life. But in case I wasn't supposed to be single, I wrote a list. And so I had all of these things on there, everything that I wanted. Of course, at the top being someone who would love God above everything else. And toward the middle, because it was kind of important to me, I wanted somebody who was tall and could carry me down the aisle on our wedding day. I'm just saying. So, but I just folded it up and... And I also wanted someone who would love my family and my church above everything else, and who would make me laugh. So, but I was going to be single, so I just focused on serving.
Okay. So I want to go back, and I just want to remind you of this verse, Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the thoughts that I think toward you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. As you've listened to our testimony thus far, I hope that you've heard how God has planted things in our lives to make us right for each other. I want to read this quote again, but the thing that I wanted to highlight here at this point is that I stressed how alone I was and right before, as I got saved, right? So that means I was not used to any type of relationship, really. Not even a parent-son relationship. Like, I didn't know how to do that at all. I don't know if anyone else can understand what that means. Because most people have somebody, at least. I had my brothers. But even then, I would get mad at them and ostracized. And so I can't emphasize how alone I felt. And coming to this church was a shock because of all the new relationships that were immediately there. And I didn't realize the amount of responsibility that comes with one relationship, let alone all of this. And so that's why this quote is so impactful to me, is because we need to live in an uncomfortable spot. That's maybe a truth that can be helpful to someone, that if you're uncomfortable in where the Lord has you, then maybe you're in a good spot. And if you're not uncomfortable, maybe you need to get uncomfortable. I say life is not a journey to the grave with the intention of arriving safely in a pretty and preserved body, but rather to skid in broadside, thoroughly used up, totally worn out, and loudly proclaiming what a ride. So I want to just tell you the story of how Crystal and I met. When I returned to college for the spring semester of my sophomore year, I was a brand new Christian. What I really needed at that time was a good church and Christian friendship to help me grow. I also had a big semester at school, though. I had several classes in my major, as well as some difficult general courses that I needed to complete. My plan was to fall into the pattern of my friend and attend an Assembly of God church with him every Sunday morning. The rest of the time would be dedicated to school. At that time, cell phones were very new and expensive, so each dorm room had a landline phone in the room. Within the first week of the new semester, my phone rang and the caller asked if I would be interested in answering some survey questions about God and the Bible. Being a new Christian, I was happy to participate. After answering the questions, the caller, which I recognized as the voice of a young lady, then proceeded to the real purpose for the call. The young lady asked if I would be interested in learning more about the Bible. I was immediately reminded of my prayer for that exact need. The second thought was that I didn't have time to attend Sunday night and Wednesday night. I answered the young lady with an apology that, though I was interested, my class load wouldn't allow the typical Sunday and Wednesday night routine. The young lady asked, would another day work better? I was caught off guard because I had never heard of going to church at any other time in my life. She sensed my hesitation and pressed the point by saying a man could answer any questions that I had and would meet any time that fit my schedule. So what time would that be? I knew there were available times that I was clinging to just so I would have moments to relax. The forcefulness of this young lady was starting to upset me, especially because she was correct. My excuses were very lame, and she had an answer for each obstacle I tried. Finally, I had enough and said, look, I'm just too busy and not interested, and I hung up the phone. Immediately, I felt a very bad mistake had been made. I remember very clearly sitting there for a second thinking I shouldn't have rejected that offer. However, I shrugged the thought off by concluding my concern was that the person had made me be rude, and I didn't like having to be forceful like that. Matthew 13:22 says, he also that received the seed among thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and become unfruitful. Man, that was so true in this situation. Let me summarize what happened and what I suspect about that call. At the same time, another person was reached by this survey. That person's name was Zach. Zach Blake said yes to the young lady that spoke to him. Zach got saved and joined the church. The church conducting the survey was Mission Boulevard Baptist Church. The man teaching the study was Dr. Patrick Briney, associate pastor at the church. The young lady conducting the survey was Crystal. That's right. I hung up on the woman who would become my wife. This unfortunately would not be the last time she was correct in a disagreement either.
Go away.
Okay, go away.
No,
don't go away.
Go away.
Okay.
So I started by saying that, like, I feel like love is a bottle of glitter spray because the Lord brought me the perfect completer to everything. I asked for someone who would love God above all else. And so we eventually, Zach helped bring Terry to the church, and he was in the campus group. And I wasn't interested in him at first, but as we served together, especially the spring break trip that Miss Colleen and Brother Pat took us on to Chicago, I sort of finagled my way into his group so I could get to know him a little bit better. But it was such a blessing that he talked to my parents, and we had a great college group to get to know each other in, so we could make sure that we did things the right way. And I didn't realize what a perfect person he would be. He asked my dad if he could court me with the intention of marrying. And I remember, I knew he was going to talk to my dad. I was away at a basketball game coaching. I was coaching girls then. I'm coaching boys now. So I was away at a basketball game, and I came home, and I was doing the dishes, and I remember my dad walked in the kitchen and said, "If you let this one get away, you're stupid." And my dad doesn't normally say things like that. And I was like, "Well, I think he's hot. I'm not going to let him get away." But my parent, I don't think the whole arranged marriage thing is necessarily bad, because your parents know your strengths, your weaknesses, and what will best complete you. And he is the perfect person. So we've been able to, once we got married, we were asked to do Sunday school, a Sunday school class together. And I'm so glad that we said yes to that, because that started us very early on in our marriage. I think we'd only been married like 3 months or something, or maybe longer. But it started us on this path of serving together. And if anybody asks us for advice, that's what we say, is get in a ministry in the church together. You will grow in ways that you never knew. It won't be easy, but it's worth it. You will go through struggles in your marriage, and you won't see eye to eye. And you'll be able to work through those things. And in a ministry, the devil attacks you more. And so you'll be able to overcome and have a stronger marriage. And I know y'all see me as the forefront of a lot of things, because I'm just so loud and in your face. But he's the person that, like, fine-tunes the ideas, tries to hold me in check, and has helped us accomplish so much. And I will have so much more to give the Lord because of him. And I could, like, if I looked the world over, I couldn't find a better person. This week was really crazy and hard, and it's Christmas, and we had a program, and I wanted glitter spray to go with the program, and I didn't have time to go get it, so he went to the mall and bought me 6 bottles of glitter spray so I could spray myself and all the kids, and he doesn't even like glitter. I'm just saying, like, when you find someone that is that sacrificial, and all the time, like, you don't, if you know me, you understand, we have boys at our house all the time now. I have half a project started and never get to finish it, so it's kind of a hot mess. Bathrooms are clean. Yeah. Dishes are done, because he does them a lot. But instead of griping about anything, constant serving, never complaining about all the chaos, because it's usually stuff for here, and then still buy me glitter spray, because that was really important to me. So to the young people out there, don't compromise and don't settle, because it is really, really, really worth the wait. And you don't know what the Lord has for you. I didn't even know him until way after I was out of college. So if I hadn't had all the people praying for me, I was trying to find that list, because I know I have it somewhere. I saved that list of what I wrote. But we were looking through really quickly this morning our wedding album, and I have pictures, old pictures of everybody. The men lined the church for my wedding, the aisle. Like, everyone's been so involved, and I just can't say thank you enough to all the prayers, because part of what we will have to give the Lord is all the prayers y'all invested in. Oh, please keep Crystal doing the right thing. Surely she can do something for God if she'll just get it together. You know, like, so when I have something to give to God, it's you guys too. And so I just thank you for being that for me, and now for my kids. So
I just want to say, as we walk off here, there are going to be points, to be transparent, there are going to be points in every marriage and commitment and relationship where you're going to question whether you want to continue in that relationship. And I can tell you, there's been times early in our marriage where I remember sitting at a table looking at Crystal, thinking there was no way we were going to resolve our conflict and that we were going to live life separately. though maybe in the same home and eventually drifting apart. And the Lord pulled us through. I can't tell you how blocked and defeated I felt, but God is far more powerful than we are. I've gotten to that same point in my church relationship as well, multiple times and recent. And all I can say is I'm at this church now because of the Lord. You know, I initially came here looking for not being alone. And I was willing to turn my back on all of those things that the Lord had given me because of an offense that I felt I had suffered. And no matter the impact to the church or to my family, but when it came to thinking about there's going to be a time when we stand before the Lord and he's going to look at us and he's going to feel worthy of all things. And he's going to ask, did you live a worthy life? What have you done that's worthy and shows my glory? Not about what he's given you, not about what he's done for you. You're going to care about what you've done for him. And so I say to a lot of people that Crystal has improved my eternity. And that's kind of a big deal. Thank you.
We're glad you joined us for our services here at Mission Boulevard Baptist Church. We look forward to having you join us again online, but you are always welcome to personally attend any of our services at the Mission Boulevard Baptist Church here in Fayetteville, Arkansas.